Hey, what's going on, listeners? Today I had the privilege of interviewing someone who is willing to discuss openly about addiction, about education, and ways to improve our overall well-being. She herself battled through the disease of addiction, but not only battled, but has risen to such heights in which she currently now is the director of two recovery centers. And she has always been willing to help people, not only on the inside, if you will, of the recovery centers themselves, but on the outside for people who just need advice, who need help, and maybe of not knowing what to do with either a family member, a friend, or anything of that nature. And I think you will just get so much out of this interview, and I appreciate her for coming on, and that is Nicole Friels.
Nicole.
John.
All right. We're joined here with Nicole Friels, and she is the director of the Warm Center in Henderson, Kentucky, and I believe is actually oversees how many other facilities?
The Mark Center in Bowling Green.
And so give us a little background, if you would, Nicole, concerning, like, you know, how this all came about of you becoming director of, you know, multiple facilities concerning helping individuals out and through their journey concerning, you know, drug or alcohol addiction.
I got sober in 2006 and completed a program similar to Warm. And when I came back to Henderson, Warm was actually finishing up construction, and I interviewed and got a job here, and slowly but surely climbed my way up to an executive position. But the reason that I'm involved with Recovery Kentucky is because of my great uncle was actually one of the founders of Recovery Kentucky. And he recently passed earlier this year, and it's very important to me to continue his legacy and continue to help the cause that he was so passionate about.
Awesome. Awesome. That's pretty powerful stuff there. I actually, as well as I know you, I didn't know that information. So when we talk about recovery, How does the general public, if you will, not understand recovery? Meaning, they don't necessarily know when they need to help and how to help someone.
I think it's anytime that it's somebody close to you, I think it is a touchy subject. And you either help too much or you don't help enough. And there's such a stigma attached to addiction that you don't really fully understand until it happens to you or somebody that you love. I think a lot of families have trouble grasping the concept of tough love, even though that's usually the best route to take. They want to give all the power to the addict and let them make decisions regarding their life when really they're not in any position to be making those decisions.
And, you know, to kind of piggyback off that, when do you feel as though, you know, especially since, you know, being over, you know, recovery centers and what you've seen, when is it right or is it always right, like in your mind, to go through a program or not go through a program?
Well, I think it's different for everybody. Of course, I have gone through short-term programs and outpatient programs, and the long-term was the only thing that ever worked for me personally. So that's what I'm going to advocate for. But I do know people that have gone to 30-day programs and gotten clean. I think everybody's turning point is going to be different, but the earlier you try to intervene, I think the better.
Right, right. So, kind of to piggyback with that, you know, like I hear you say certain terminology and use certain words, but what I don't hear that me personally, I've always hated and felt as though certain terms need to change in order for, as you said earlier, stigmas and that are attached to all this and everything. And that is rock bottom. Like I personally cannot stand to hear that. And again, that's a personal thing, but I say that only because I feel like it's got such a negative connotation. And the individual who is already going through, you know, a tough battle themselves to just attach more and more negativity to it. So I'm someone who says, it's kind of like what you kind of touched on, and that is, and we'll go into to ask you the question, do you feel as though like certain terminology needs to transition to new words, if you will, in order to maybe take the stigma away?
I think rock bottom is a horrible term to use. And I'm in complete agreement with you because, you know, somebody's rock bottom could be death, and you don't want to wait until then. You know, a person's desire to change can come with any kind of negative consequences at any time. You know, some people may have a desire to change once they lose custody of their children. Some may have a desire to change if they go to jail. You know, when the pain is great enough, you know, that brings about willingness. And, you know, I think the whole thing that everybody talks about, you know, they have to get reach rock bottom. I completely disagree because there's too many people dying of this disease.
And to go along with that now, you kind of transition to my next question. And that is, sometimes, you know, in my field, I'll get asked a lot, like, you know, is the media really just kind of playing all this up? Is there's not an epidemic or this or that? You know, when my response is they aren't playing it enough. You know, you don't realize what it is. And so is it that great? I mean, you see that more than me even, because I'm just in workplaces, if you will, and see my positivity, you know, the positive rate just in workplace has doubled just here locally. And so what have you seen? Is it an epidemic? Is like, what are we facing?
I think it's been an epidemic for a while. I think the media is just now starting to pick up on it and report on it because it has crossed over into different communities, so to speak. I think that pharmaceutical companies overprescribing medications, you know, 20 years ago contributed to the heroin epidemic. And I think it'll continue to be a problem.
And so with that, what have you seen? Like, what is it, if you will, that what we've done, and this is kind of like, you know, what I feel as though is what we've done in the past isn't working. I mean, that's kind of obvious. So if it's not working, one of the things, and we touched a little bit on it, was terminology, but another was just from a standpoint of just like, how do we get comfortable talking about it? Because I feel like the more we do, the better it can get, yet nobody's comfortable to say anything. And so that just helps someone who's going through this, you know, disease to get to stay in the shadows. And, you know, and I talk about like bringing it to life, if you will, and not allowing that individual to stay in the darkness. I mean, and the more we talk, the more it kind of brings it out. Like what is you agree with that? Is that our step? Like, how do we kind of take the next step?
I think education, teaching people about what addiction is. You know, everybody has their opinions, and unfortunately with social media, everybody gets to state their opinions, and the people that kind of talk about addiction with a negative connotation only harm the people that need help. You know, everybody about whether addiction is a disease or not. In my opinion, it is a disease. The brain, it's a disease that centers in the brain. The brain's an organ. Anytime that we can let people know that addiction is a disease, it's a treatable disease, and that there's hope and there's nothing to be ashamed about, I think that we'll start to make a little bit more progress. I think that addiction hurts the people that are closest to the addicts, and they want to get angry at addiction and say, oh, well, it was their choice. And, you know, how can you give Narcan to somebody that overdoses on heroin when it was their choice? And they want to compare it to somebody that needs insulin and all that. And really, it's all one and the same.
Correct. You're just medicating, if you will, issue with an individual. And so now you talk about education. At what age do you believe it can be somewhat, introduced first, but not only that, really grasped by someone. And so I ask that because, as we grew up, we had the DARE program, and then, Nancy Reagan was pushing the Just Say No campaign. And we kind of look back on that now, and it didn't really kind of work. And I think only because there was no follow up, if you will, like the educate, it kind of, started or whatnot, at a young age for us, but then there was no follow-up. So like, when do you feel as though it's the right time? And then at what point and where are we failing in terms of continuous education?
I think a lot of children are exposed to this kind of stuff at home that we really don't even know about, grandparents, parents that are addicts, brothers, sisters. I really don't know what's too early. My thought would be middle school. A lot of the kids that go into, 6th, 7th, and 8th grade, they're being exposed to a lot of real life, situations that we don't even know about. But I do believe that there has to be follow-up. There needs to be after school programs, there needs to be early intervention. And when I say intervention, I don't mean like punishments or, taking away privileges. I'm talking about to counseling. There needs to be peer support programs for, people in the middle school and high school. I could go on all day about what all needs to be done. But that's just my thoughts.
Sure. Like that's why I've had a lot of kind of pushback, if you will, or not understanding why. So like we've had this drug testing now that is going on, within school, locally in our schools, it just started, but is really going on, kind of nationwide. And the reason, if you will, that I was not necessarily against it, if you will, but I was against how, like, there wasn't really anything around it. And I'm, even though I might own a drug testing company, I don't believe that it doesn't teach anything. The drug test needs to happen. Yes. But whenever you, let's say we test a child or something, and then we just take something away or whatever else without educating or having something follow up after that, it doesn't serve any purpose. And so when you've seen what has taken place, and we know drug testing is going on amongst kids, where are we failing there? Do you feel like in terms of the education side?
As far as I know, there is no follow through. It's all consequences. And I mean, I don't even know what happens after that. I don't have a child at that age yet, but, you know, I mean, you have to get families involved. You have to see what's going on at home to, you know, get the child back on track. Because if you just take something away from them, they're going to say, well, okay, so this is more important. This is what I'm going to do. You know what
sure.
I mean?
Okay.
I think it's a good idea, but I think there has to be something else. You know what I mean?
Yeah, there's no, so like if, let's say I'm playing basketball, I get drug tested or something. They say, hey, you can't play now for a month and whatever. Like there's, the child now is just outed, if you will. That's first and mm-hmm. Look, I like, and you and I know, I mean, growing up, I've been in a lot of situations, and at that age, you know, even in middle school, but for sure, even in high school, where the amount of, like, I love it when it's like, well, you know, they just got to learn to say no, or they got like, it ain't like that. Like, for some kids, you don't say no, like, because you're in certain situations to where it doesn't work that way. Mm-hmm. And so that's where I kind of like where you're saying, like, if there's no follow-up and you don't really know the child and what's the background, then what are we doing?
Exactly.
You know, because I don't know where it's just benefiting them. Because at the end of the day, if you're going to take something away that they love that could maybe be more of a goal, then we're only harming, not helping.
Right.
So,
right. Because I think, you know, speaking as, you know, somebody that's in recovery from addiction, if you take away something that I love, I'm just going to replace it with the drugs anyway.
Sure.
And it's just going to contribute to the problem.
Yeah, because now you're saying, yeah, you're talking about filling that void, you know.
Right.
Yeah, and you know, same as me, you know, as a recovering addict, you know, you're thinking that you're sitting, whenever certain things go away, it's like, you know, it's my brain, it's, you know, it's racing at all times, and so I'm always, you know, go, and so when something's gone, you're exactly right, I got to stay busy with something and keep focused, and that's where I think a lot of times, you know, when we talk about someone relapsing or anything else, and talk a little bit about that. Like, I don't think people understand, like, the high rate that it's probably going to happen and kind of why. Like, people think that they just, you know, the person just fails, or they, oh, you don't love your kids anymore because now you realize, like, I don't see it that way. And talk a little bit about that, like what the percentages maybe are or something of somebody kind of, you know, relapsing.
Well, I mean, of course, the statistics are high for relapse because people use drugs and alcohol as a coping mechanism for something else that's going on inside of them. And if you don't treat those underlying issues, you know, drugs and alcohol are always going to be the solution, no matter how much clean time that you have. You know, you think about people that quit smoking cigarettes and then, you know, they haven't smoked for 5 or 6 years, and then next thing you know, they're smoking cigarettes again because they think that it makes them feel better or relieve stress. It's the same situation with substance abuse. And unfortunately, it is a part of most people's journey, even though it doesn't have to be.
And is that due to, you think, maybe the type of... Is the success rate, I'll kind of follow up with that, is the success rate higher than with someone who's willing to dedicate to a more of a long-term program like what you oversee than the short term of maybe outpatient or something of that nature?
Yeah, you know, when people come to the Warm Center or MARC or any Recovery Kentucky Center, they stay for a minimum of 6 months. And the longer that you can take them out of their unhealthy environment and instill education and healthy coping mechanisms, you know, the better. You think about how long it takes to form a habit. you know, you wake up every morning and decide to brush your teeth every day. Well, you do that for a month, every day for a month, pretty soon it's going to be like second nature.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of what we do here. It's all repetitive. It's structure and education.
So you're talking about now, I mean, you're saying pretty much like we're kind of teaching individuals a new way of life, really, if you will, like, you know, how to.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah. And to do that, Lord, I can't imagine what it takes in terms of one, the individual, of course, has to be willing. I mean, we know that. But two is you've got to have a pretty dang good not only program, if you will, of teaching there, but then kind of follow up. And so what is, if you could kind of describe for some of the listeners, what are like, you know, we see the new apartments and different things around the warm. Like, what is that follow up? What's that next step look like maybe for families that don't know or are going through something? What's the next step? How do we make sure and kind of not necessarily keep a thumb on them, or maybe it is. I don't know. Like, what's that look like?
Well, as far as our sober living apartments, we have 64 units where the women that complete the program can move into the apartments and bring their families to live with them. And it's just the extra layer of accountability. The apartments are considered permanent housing, but they do sign an addendum to the lease that states that we can drug test them, search them, or any of their visitors that are on the property at any time. And you know, the accountability that they learn in the program kind of transfers over there, and they hold themselves and each other accountable. As far as for the women that decide to go back home, to wherever they came from, they have to work an aftercare plan, and they're encouraged to keep in touch. And then we have alumni events every year where we invite everybody to come back. But if something happens and somebody that leaves in compliance and in good standing with the program and they ever need to come back, they're allowed to do so without waiting on a waiting list.
So is that, yeah, that's, I guess that's a nice question on that. So do you all have, a waiting list really at both facilities? Is that kind of the case now?
We do. We have waiting lists that are at least three to five months long at each facility. Of course, we have to give our Department of Corrections referrals priority on that waiting list because we do have a contract with them. But yeah, there's no shortage of people that need our services, unfortunately.
You know, and that just goes back to kind of what we talked about earlier. You know, if that's the case and if that many people are affected, it's amazing that somehow, some way, we've got to, you know, come up with something, if you will, to take this out of the dark shadows of people not wanting to talk. I mean, so we'll wrap it up with this, and that is, so what do you feel, maybe just on a smaller scale? I mean, sometimes with anything, any movement or anything, you've got to start, you know, with the first step. What maybe as a community, or maybe as what maybe the Warm may offer that maybe we don't know about on like a, I don't know, maybe ever so often or something, in terms of what can we do, like to bring awareness to let people know maybe like, hey, you know, on, I don't know, once every 3 months, the Warm does a talk to a parent. I don't know, something. But what's a step a small community could do?
I think a lot of people, first of all, I want to talk about the strong community support that we've gotten from the majority of Henderson County. I mean, it's unbelievable. But, you know, you do hear some negative, you know, people, those Warm girls, and they're all walking in packs. And what people don't understand is they're encouraged to walk in packs for accountability, but most of all camaraderie. You know, these women are going through major life changes and they need each other for support. And there's a lot of love in this house. I know right now we do offer a family program for people that are in the program, and on one Saturday a month, we have a family therapist come in and do an all day counseling session with families. And I've not heard anything but good things about it. What I would like to do is get our foot in the door with the high school and the middle school, and you know, do a little bit like what we were talking about, some assemblies, some after school programs, just education, education, education. And that's for parents, children's, you know, educators, everybody. You know, I've got big plans, but, you know, first of all, we have to get through the initial roadblock of actually getting in there.
Sure. And you bring a good point there of administration and everybody, because, you know, the teachers and everyone are kind of frontline defense, if you will, because those, you know, those children, you know, as my wife will say, those are her babies, you know, so they can, mm-hmm. they can tell, and they know early on if something is bothering that child. And they usually even know what's going on, you know, from a home standpoint as well, which can help out a lot, but then they don't, at the same time, they don't know what to do. You know, mm-hmm. and it's nothing but just, like you say, it's lack of knowledge. And it's, we've got to do something, if you will, to be able to bring that to them. So, how can someone, a family or anything, how can they, reach, the Warm or Mark? What avenues, maybe phone numbers, which websites, what's your contact information?
The website for Warm is www.warmrecovery.com. And then the one for Mark is markrecovery.com. That's MARC. And there is a submission link that you can go online and fill out your inquiry. And then somebody will email you back with the information on what to do.
Awesome. Awesome. Nicole, I can't thank you enough. Always been a wonderful friend to me, and I appreciate all you do in the community.
All right. Thanks, Nicole. John.